This is Peter Wallace at the Festival of Homiletics 2007 in Nashville, and with me is the Reverend Barbara Brown Taylor. Thank you for talking with me.
I'm glad to, Peter.
Your book, Leaving Church, is just recently out in trade paperback, and I know you've gotten a variety of responses to the book. Has there been anything that surprised you about the response to your book?
I think the surprise is that after two initial lukewarm, one might say awful reviews, I have heard nothing but wonderful things from people. I've probably got 1,000 letters from people who have said the book has helped them stay in ministry, decide to choose ministry, which tells me it succeeded because it was a love story. That's the subtitle I wanted that I didn't get. But I meant it as a conversation starter, and it seems to have done that. So I've been gratified by the positive response to the book when I expected the worst.
Well, the title itself was a little controversial because you weren't really leaving church. You were leaving a specific place, but was there negative response about the title? Or
well, it was a true title. I left parish ministry probably for good. One knows better than to say that in the presence of God. But I the church of the title is Grace Calvary Church in Clarksville, Georgia. But what I discovered as I left was ways in which, at least for me, the current job description as pastor in charge of a congregation X's out many of the very things one needs to be pastor of a congregation. So the title represented the enormity, really, of what I was going after.
But your ministry to the church and in the church certainly continues. You are teaching, of course, in two places. In the book, you talked about starting teaching at Piedmont College. You teach religion there. What is that experience like?
Well, you bring up another. One last thing about that title is there is also some irony in it because I also discovered I hadn't left church at all, that church was simply broader, wider, more open than I'd ever imagined. So, yes, now my ministry, I can say this, is in the classroom. At a church-related liberal arts college in northeast Georgia, when I first came, I was the religion department. Now I have two colleagues, but we teach all the basic classes in a liberal arts college, which means only one religion or philosophy class is required for graduation.
And then you started teaching as adjunct faculty at Columbia Seminary. What's the focus there that you teach?
It's a wonderful program. I was attracted initially because they didn't ask me to teach preaching. They asked me to teach congregational spirituality at the Doctor of Ministry level, which means you don't really teach it. You simply sit around a table with pastors who are practicing and convene a conversation. So that's been a wonderful opportunity. To go from 19-year-olds to seasoned pastors is just the greatest experience in the world, and to tell them stories about one another with their permission.
Well, you certainly teach preaching at events like this. Is that something that you enjoy doing, modeling and teaching preaching?
Well, I love pastors, so I come to events like this because so many hungry pastors come, and if I can put any food on their plates, I want to do that because my gratitude for who they are and what they do is greater than ever.
You're involved in a major project for Westminster John Knox, the lectionary commentary project. Tell us about that. What's going on with that?
Well, after you write a book called Leaving Church, you should do something for the church, don't you think? So this is a huge, we in secret call it the Monster Lectionary Commentary Series. It will be a 12-volume hardback series that will be finished in around 2009, I think. So I co-edit the series with David Bartlett, who was both dean and professor of preaching at Yale Divinity School, which is my alma mater. So that's been terrific fun. It's a joint project between Columbia Seminary and Westminster John Knox, with an editorial board that includes a lot more denominations.
A wonderful range of people involved in that.
Oh, we've got everybody from Eberhard Busch to Martin Marty to pastors. This is the important part, is we have lots and lots of pastors writing exegetical and theological essays, and we've got lots of academics writing pastoral and homiletical essays. So we're trying to jumble the categories.
Are you planning another book sometime?
I have a contract for another book. I've written one page so far. So I'll do my next book with Harper One is the new name, Harper One. And I'm calling it an altar in the world, but I haven't yet found a way to describe it that doesn't sound boring, so I have to write it. But it will be a practice-based book about what it means to look for God everywhere, to pray without ceasing, as it were, instead of deciding that it's 1 hour on Sunday in which God comes to us. So it will be a general market book, though, so it'll be a challenge like the last one.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your lecture on the parables here at the festival. You made so many wonderful points. You know, it seems that our culture is immersed with stories in the media, TV, movies, and so forth. And yet we in the church, in our communication, tend to shy away from that form. Is there a reason for that? The reason we kind of default to the Pauline style of teaching rather than Jesus, do you think?
Your question's better than any answer. I think we all could wonder about that more than we do. Since you point out that we're inundated with stories, I take seriously my charge to tell good news, because I think the stories that we hear and believe are the stories that shape our views of the world and therefore shape how we live in the world. So I feel a great responsibility as a preacher and teacher to offer alternate views of the world and our place in it that have got some hope in them and some ways to make differences and some ways to be whole and in community with other people. And you don't always get that in the other stories that surround us.
It seems as though many of us are troubled or scared by parables. I mean, do you have any explanation why that is?
I wonder if it's because we grew up on Aesop's fables or something. Some of us, not now, but I wonder if we, you know, grew up on stories with morals and direction. I think all in all, you know, a huge conundrum in the church today is I think it works to aid religious security and certainty and help people feel more stable and centered. And if anything, the work of Jesus did the exact opposite. It was how to decenter, disturb, reform people. So in some ways, it's no surprise we're a little bit crazy. We're trying to do what the Gospels never meant to do.
It seems as though a number of people like to have the answers. They want the three steps to whatever, and parables are so open-ended. How can we live in that uncertainty, the open-endedness of what Jesus taught?
Well, the truth is your life's that way anyhow. To me, it's not a matter of living differently. It's a matter of telling the truth about the way life really is. It's very open-ended. And the little things you and I do today have effect we don't even know. So in some ways, it's just a matter of fessing up to the way things truly are. My worry is that we've become lazy and that we would rather have someone, as I said, chew our food for us and just tell us what to do. Not so we can do it, so we can argue with it maybe or feel badly that we didn't do it. So I wonder sometimes if the way we set church up, we ordain people who are supposed to know things and tell us things. I think it's good news, really, that church is moving into more of a circle shape right now, where more people are taking responsibility for teaching, preaching, and these house church groups that are becoming so popular. I think the leadership is shared more, and I think that can't be anything but good news for God's people.